Types of commercial properties. Introduction. Commercial real estate offers exposure to a variety of different types of properties for a multitude of uses by diverse businesses. Each buyer or tenant will have specific requirements for size, usage, location, and quality for the property, among other considerations. Agents will typically work with one or more of the following property types: office, retail, raw land for development, special use, multifamily and apartments, industrial, and hospitality and leisure. Office properties. The demand for office space is affected by employment in the corporate sector. Companies need to lease office space in office buildings or parks. These include companies in the following industries: finance, technology, real estate brokerages, and insurance, among others. Office buildings are categorized by location, either in a central business district, CBD, or in the suburbs. Quality ranked A through D. Size or how many floors or how tall the building is. Suburban office buildings are outside of major cities, usually along major corridors and heavily traveled highways. Most are situated in an office park, also called a business park. They range in size from low-rise, 1 to 2 stories, to mid-rises, rarely over 4 or 5 stories. In the suburban market, mid-rises average around 5 stories. Land is often less expensive the farther it is outside of a central business district. So, office parks spread out instead of building up. Many office parks cover multiple acres of land. Office parks can cater to a variety of businesses from different industries or to one major employer. Two of the most commonly seen styles of office parks are the campus style and the urban style. Campus style parks. Campus style parks are so named due to their resemblance to university campuses. They are usually quite large, spread over several acres of land, allow for ample parking, and do not rely on foot traffic from the proximity to other retail businesses. Oil/energy companies and healthcare providers, like dentists and general practitioners, often lease space in campus-style office parks. Technology companies like Google and large energy companies like ExxonMobil often choose to build standalone corporate campuses in the suburbs. Large campuses allow them to consolidate thousands of employees into one single location, instead of spreading throughout a central business district with higher rental rates. By taking up a larger footprint of acreage, corporate suburban office parks can offer employees free parking, a cafeteria, full gym facilities, and in some cases, a daycare facility. However, today, many office parks are suffering from high vacancy rates because business owners and their employees want to be closer to public transportation, restaurants, and shopping. Urban-style parks. Urban-style parks are usually in busy, developed geographical regions, yet still outside of the central business district. Land is at a premium, yet not as expensive as in a central business district. Clustered together, buildings range in height, usually topping out at 5 to 7 stories. These parks offer access to major freeways and shopping centers, as well as a shorter commute for employees who live in the suburbs. The trend today is to take urban-style parks toward a more mixed-use development of office, retail, entertainment, and residential space, offering tenants and residents an urban lifestyle of shopping, dining, working, and living, without the hassles of driving or parking downtown. Examples of successful mixed-use properties include The Domain in Austin and City Center in Houston. Central Business District, CBD. The Central Business District, CBD, of a city is located within its heart, home to banking, finance, and mega insurance companies, among other industries. Land is at a premium, parking is scarce and expensive, and rents are high in a CBD. However, location is key, and most CBDs are close to public transportation and cultural hotspots like museums and concert and sporting venues. Office buildings in a CBD are typically of the high-rise or skyscraper variety. Companies with an eye out for name recognition often like to lease office space in a high-profile building for optimum visibility and prestige. Big corporations will often take up office space on multiple floors of a building. Many landlords offer building naming rights to anchor tenants, tenants who take up a large amount of space, to attract them to lease more space. Naming rights also benefit the tenant by giving them the visibility they want. People often associate high-rises and skyscrapers with the visible name in lights, as opposed to its actual address. In addition to building naming rights, some office buildings offer signage rights for companies who want their name and branding near the building, but perhaps do not have building naming rights in their budgets, as the large signs alone can cost big money. Classifying a property. Assigning a classification to a property is a subjective undertaking. There is no official rating system for building classification, and each market and submarket is different. For example, a property that is classified on the higher end of the spectrum in one market may rate slightly lower in another. This discrepancy is based on what is happening within the market itself. A hot market with many high-end commercial properties that are built to green, energy-efficient standards will have a measurable effect on the nice yet older surrounding properties, usually downgrading them slightly. Buildings are generally ranked A through D, A being the highest, D being the lowest. Some A-plus properties do exist in certain markets. A-plus properties would be high-end builds with high-rent addresses. These trophy buildings will attract an exclusive clientele who do not mind paying a premium for the type of exposure that being in a top-rated building will bring them. Many factors go into deciding which classification to assign to a particular property. Savvy commercial agents should know just by looking at a property what classification a building will earn in their particular market. Buildings are often classified according to location. How close is the property to major thoroughfares, public transportation, and shopping? Is the area prosperous or economically depressed? Does the property suffer from external obsolescence? External obsolescence refers to the loss in value of a property caused by factors outside of the property itself. External obsolescence is sometimes referred to as environmental or economic obsolescence. Condition. Is the building well maintained, or does it suffer from deferred maintenance? Is the building out of date? Does it suffer from functional obsolescence? Functional obsolescence is a loss in the desirability of the style, layout, or function of an element of a property. Rent or price. Class A buildings can charge tenants higher leasing rates for office space because they are often new and offer sought-after amenities to lessees. Resident profile. Who is in the building? Are these well-established companies? Amenities. What amenities does the building offer? Some amenities include an on-site gym and deli, or security personnel, and visitor check-in to attract high-quality office tenants. Some other property characteristics to consider are aesthetics, construction standards, elevators, parking, entry and lobby, on-site professional management, building systems and technology, HVAC systems, and common area improvements. Classifications by quality. Class A buildings. Class A buildings are usually recently developed properties in desirable, cosmopolitan areas that will attract sophisticated tenants. Class A office buildings are typically going to be newer properties with quality construction. These properties are located in areas with easy access to major thoroughfares and will often be landmark buildings that are known by name across the city. Many will include on-site gyms and delis or convenience stores. Leasing space in these properties will be expensive for tenants, but will provide them with a strong market presence. Older buildings that have been renovated, painstakingly improved, and upgraded to include sought-after amenities can also carry an A classification in some markets. Class B buildings. Class B buildings are generally older, yet well-maintained properties that are in good locations. These properties may have once commanded a Class A rating and clientele, but have fallen in status due to age and competition from newer, higher-end properties. The building finishes are adequate, but lack the quality and polish of a Class A property. Office buildings classified as Bs typically have good visibility from major arteries and some amenities, but owners cannot charge tenants premium rates. Building owners often renovate Class B buildings, creating outside seating, upgrading lobbies, elevators, and common areas to try to squeeze out an A rating to attract quality tenants. Class C buildings. Class C buildings are usually older properties, 20 years and up, that are maintained as functional properties for tenants and residents. These properties often need upgrades or facelifts. Rent is on the lower end, and there are not many amenities. Office buildings typically do not go any lower than a C classification. Office space in Class C buildings can take a long time to lease as tenants interested in leasing in these properties often want to reduce overhead so they can use their money to put toward growing their businesses. Class D buildings. Class D buildings rank the lowest, and in many markets, these are buildings that display obvious signs of deferred maintenance. These are older buildings, usually more than 30 years, that have been neglected or have not been appropriately maintained, and are often not in prime or preferred locations. Rents are typically below market, and it is challenging for landlords to attract good tenants. Businesses that are not as address conscious will typically choose to lease space in Class B or Class C buildings, depending upon their budget. Investors will often be interested in buying a Class C building, then renovating it to bring it up to today's basic standards. The idea behind this is to buy when the property is distressed at a high cap rate, then put the money saved into rehabbing the property and raise the rents. The investor will hold on to the property and sell it at a low cap rate in order to make money on the deal. For more information on building classification, see BOMA's website. Buildings are also classified by their size into low-rise, mid-rise, and high-rise. Many people are familiar with the term high-rise, equating them with the skyscrapers in our major cities and metropolitan areas that soar high above our heads. The term skyscraper is often used interchangeably with high-rise, though some will argue this point. As with building class ratings, there is no hard and fast rule distinguishing a mid-rise from a high-rise. This classification is a subjective determination predicated by the market. Different classification criteria exist across markets. A mid-rise in one city, for example, might be considered a high-rise in another. Local planning boards may also have classification systems that can vary based on whether or not the property is in a central business district or a suburban area. Some lenders, like Freddie Mac, even have their own classification systems. The Commercial Real Estate Development Association, NAIOP, classifies office buildings as low-rise, less than 7 stories, mid-rise, 7 to 25 stories, high-rise, more than 25 stories. However, other industry insiders will classify low-rise buildings between 1 to 4 stories, mid-rise buildings between 7 to 11 stories, and high-rise buildings as 12 stories and up, with skyscrapers as anything above 40 floors. Skyscrapers can be further classified as super tall, the Empire State Building in NYC, and megatall, the Bir Sahlif AA in Dubai. Office layout. The type of office space that a tenant will require is dependent upon the type of business that is leasing the space and the business's particular needs. In order to help your client find the space that best functions for his or her business, you should be familiar with the type of layout that will be required. Most traditional office layouts should include a reception desk for greeting visitors and clients, and a seating area, private offices for executives and managers, open space for cubicles, known as a bullpen or other types of workstations, a break room or lunch area with space for a table, fridge, microwave, and plumbing for a sink, an equipment room for copiers, fax machines, and shredders or mailroom, space for a conference room. Technology companies like Google and Facebook have paved the way for creative office layouts that promote employee creativity in ways that traditional office layouts do not. These office spaces are often more casual and flexible than the bullpen style of office and include open floor plans, often with loft space, with inventive workspaces. Many companies do not want to separate workers into rows of cubicles. Instead, small tables inspire group collaboration. Sofas and comfortable lounge chairs recall the comforts of home. Some offices even have game rooms where employees can take a short break to return refreshed and hopefully ready to solve issues. These offices also need room for private workstations and may want to incorporate some outside space, like a rooftop deck. Though companies looking for creative office spaces are usually in the technology field, other industries enjoy creative office layouts as well. Architectural firms, fashion and design houses, and agencies, among others, want to provide a comfortable atmosphere for their employees that feels less like an office and more like a home. The average office space per employee is shrinking. To save money on rent and to keep business disruption to a minimum, companies are consolidating staff that was once on multiple floors of a building to one or two floors only. According to a startup called Density, the average space per worker was 151 square feet in 2017. This figure was down from 176 square feet just 5 years earlier in 2012, and it is only predicted to decrease in the future. Remote working and the mobile office model is also partially to blame for this shift toward leasing less space. VPNs, Wi-Fi, and smartphones have freed up employees and independent contractors alike, allowing them to work from literally any location they prefer. In order to facilitate a more mobile office model, many companies have opted to stop creating bulky paper files and have moved many of their physical servers over to cloud storage solutions. This arrangement allows them to not only store and access documents, but also to share information with coworkers and clients. Cloud storage solutions require less space for filing cabinets and storage rooms. An LLC or corporation often owns smaller office buildings and office parks. Urban-style office parks attract ownership by REITs due to the diversity of retail, business, entertainment, and residential properties they offer. High-rises and skyscrapers, which are expensive to build, make excellent long-term investments for life insurance companies. Multifamily and apartment properties. As we established earlier in the text, residential buyers are basing their decision to buy upon different information and emotions. Residential buyers have specific criteria they have decided as essential for their homes. For example, one home buyer may require a home with four bedrooms and a kitchen with white cabinets. Another home buyer operating on a more emotional level might need to envision himself making memories and growing old in a house. Investors in multifamily and apartments, on the other hand, are interested in one thing: making money on their investment. These investors are all about business, and the first thing that they will want to know about an investment property is the capitalization rate, cap rate. The cap rate is a percentage found by dividing the property's net operating income, NOI, by its value or price. It allows investors to assess whether a property is a good investment or not. It is the industry standard for assessing an asset. See Chapter 8 for examples. If the cap rate is not in line with what the investor expects, then they will most likely not even view the property. In theory, the lower the cap rate, the lower the risk. The higher the cap rate, the higher the risk, but possibly the higher the return. Investors are looking for knowledgeable, savvy commercial agents who can give them the information that they need, like cap rates, upfront, without wasting their time. Residential agents often find it challenging to market small multifamily properties effectively to investors. It takes an agent who can speak the language of the investor to market the property the right way and through the proper channels to close the deal. Many smaller multifamily properties like triplexes, quadplexes, and smaller apartment buildings are owned by individual investors, small LLCs, or even trusts. The larger the property, more units, the better the chances that it is owned by an LLC or corporation, which may make it harder to contact the owners. Multifamily classifications. As with office buildings, multifamily properties are ranked Class A through D according to their location, condition, resident profile, and amenities. Commercial agents who know their markets should be able to assess a property's classification just by driving by the property. There is no definitive definition of each classification. Classifications are subjective and are entirely dependent upon the multifamily market in an area. Class A multifamily. Class A multifamily properties will be new builds with granite countertops, garden tubs, higher grade appliances, usually stainless steel, in each unit. The property will boast a luxurious clubhouse with a resort-style pool and a well-equipped gym. Often, these properties will have high walkability scores, close to shopping districts and entertainment. The apartment owner can charge premium rental rates for these properties. These high-quality properties tend to have a lower cap rate because investors are not going to realize a high cash flow. Operating expenses are high, as the properties have professional management companies and many amenities to maintain. Class B multifamily. Class B multifamily properties will rent in the mid-range of the market and will be in desirable areas, but will not offer the amenities of a Class A property. Class C multifamily. Class C multifamily units are clean, but might not have central AC, depending instead on window units to cool the apartments. Appliances are older, yet functional, and kitchens and bathrooms are merely utilitarian. Class C properties offer a higher cap rate than A's or B's, and many investors are interested in buying C-quality properties in B-quality locations. After the investors purchase the properties, they clean them up so that they can raise the rents. Class D multifamily. Class D multifamily properties are typically in economically depressed areas and often suffer from a great deal of deferred maintenance. These properties typically have higher cap rates because of the high risk involved. These properties will require a sizable investment for rehabilitation to bring them up to a higher standard. Commercial agents will also be able to classify multifamily properties by their rents. Remember, rental markets are different in each area, but let's look at a basic example of rents for a two-bedroom apartment in different locations spanning an urban area. Types of multifamily properties. There are a variety of multifamily properties that agents will encounter in their markets, from duplexes and quadplexes to mid-rise and high-rise properties. Each property has specific characteristics that set it apart from others. Duplex, triplex, and quadplex. These properties consist of two units, three units, and four units respectively. Investors find them attractive because they can live in one unit and generate income by renting out the rest of the units. They are also popular because they still qualify, under five units, for residential lending, so investors do not have to take out a commercial loan. Residential lending means lower interest rates and longer loan terms for the borrower. Duplexes, triplexes, and quadplexes also make suitable starter investments. It is easier to manage these smaller properties than it is to dive right into managing a larger multi-unit property. Investors can hire a professional property manager to screen applicants, collect rents, and deal with repairs, but often opt to save on the cost of a manager and do it themselves. Walk-ups. Walk-ups consist of a building, usually 4 to 6 stories, without an elevator. Residents must walk up the stairs to access their apartments. Walk-ups are often older buildings, built before elevators, located in and around urban areas, such as an old brownstone in Brooklyn. There are usually no amenities in a traditional urban walk-up. There may or may not be a small laundry facility on site. Low-rises. Low-rise buildings usually consist of 1 to 3 stories and are often located in residential areas as opposed to busy urban settings. There are fewer units available for residents, and amenities are scarce. Apartments in low-rise buildings typically rent for less per month than those in mid- and high-rise properties. Mid-rises. A mid-rise is typically a multi-story property equipped with an elevator. The number of stories in a mid-rise building is dependent upon the market. A mid-rise in one market may amount to a low-rise in another. Mid-rise apartment and condo buildings are popular in urban areas because builders can stack stories one on top of the other. Building up allows for a smaller footprint. The goal is to have as many units generating income as possible on the least amount of land. Urban mid-rises often offer high-end amenities such as a resort-style pool, fully outfitted workout facility, community gathering spaces, and possibly a dog run. They are usually located near shopping and nightlife, attracting young professionals who like to be close to the action. High-rises. As the name suggests, high-rises are taller than mid-rise buildings, usually with 9 or more floors consisting of multiple dwelling units. High-rise apartment buildings are also sometimes referred to as multi-dwelling units, MDUs. High-rise apartment buildings must have at least one working elevator. Residents should not be expected to climb 12 stories to access their units. Residents in urban high-rise apartment buildings take advantage of city views and proximity to commerce, retail, and entertainment. Some buildings offer private balconies, rooftop pools, internet bars, and comfortable, well-decorated common areas for residents. Garden-style apartments. Garden-style buildings are typically low-rise, 1 to 3 floors, clusters of buildings spanning a large piece of property with access to the landscaped outdoor areas surrounding the structure, like gardens. Often built around a courtyard, many of the ground floor units feature patios, while units on the higher floors have access to private balconies. Garden-style apartments can be found in suburban and urban areas, depending on the market. For example, New York City will not have many garden-style apartment complexes to choose from due to the limited availability of affordable land. Garden-style complexes in urban areas are typically older builds that are popular with renters because the grounds are designed for pets and children. Basic amenities like pools, workout facilities, and sidewalks are also attractive draws. Rents tend to be cheaper due to the age and condition of most of the units. Investors often sink enough money in to do basic upgrades. Though garden-style apartments are popular with renters, many developers are turning to mid-rise construction, especially in urban areas, due to the rising cost of land for development. Retail properties. As with multifamily properties, there is a great deal of variety in commercial retail property. Included is everything from small freestanding stores to large enclosed shopping malls and restaurants. Unlike residential real estate, commercial retailers rely heavily upon the demographics of an area. To figure out whether or not they will meet the needs of an area, retailers will expect agents to give them as much information as possible regarding the race, education level, household income, and number of children per household of area residents. Retailers want to know traffic patterns, location and signage visibility, and the ease of ingress to and egress from the parking lot onto the main road. They will also want information on the other retailers in the center in case there is a potential competitor. The average person may not realize just how much research and forethought goes into a retailer's search for the optimal location. A dry cleaner, for example, will want to be located on the AM side of the street, the morning rush hour side of the street, so that commuters can easily drop off their dry cleaning on their way to work. A bar owner who wants to attract the happy hour crowd benefits from a location on the PM side of the street, making it easier for thirsty patrons to drop by for a drink on their way home. Agents need to be familiar with the traffic patterns of their regions during certain times of the day so that they can find the best locations for their clients. Freestanding retail buildings. Freestanding buildings are designed with single tenants in mind, like large national chain drugstores, home improvement stores, box stores, and restaurant or fast food. They are typically located on busy retail corridors with excellent visibility near shopping centers. Building owners and investors like these standalone properties because leases are double or triple net with terms of 10 years and over, including contractual rent increases. The tenant takes care of many of the maintenance issues associated with the interior and exterior of the property, and often pays for property taxes and insurance. Shopping centers. Anyone who has ever done any driving in the suburbs should be familiar with shopping centers as they permeate the suburban landscape. Shopping centers do more than provide investors with handsome returns. They also provide essentials like groceries and service-oriented businesses like salons, liquor stores, and dry cleaning to the populace, as well as employment opportunities. Many centers feature one or more anchor stores that serve as the main drivers of the revenue. Like an anchor holds a boat in a fixed position, preventing it from being carried off by the waves, an anchor store can keep a shopping center afloat by bringing in consumer traffic. Anchor stores are often well-known chain grocery stores, pharmacies, department stores, or restaurants that benefit the surrounding businesses in the center by bringing in steady foot traffic. Shadow anchors are also quite common. Shadow anchors are usually well-known stores owned by the retailer, not the shopping center owner, but are present in or near the center and bring in foot traffic. There are several classifications of shopping centers that vary in concept, size, and design, each attracting different types of anchors, or no anchor, to bring in business. Shopping centers also vary in shape or pattern. The most common configurations are straight line, L-shaped, and U-shaped, but there are also other designs like T-shape, T-design, cluster, triangle design, dumbbell, and double dumbbell. Variations on the patterns exist depending upon the purpose of the center and the size of the trade area that it services. Some of the more complex shapes may be open or enclosed with shared walkways. Shopping center design classification. Straight line or strip design. Shops are configured in a straight row. L-shaped. The L-shaped center is based on a straight line with an offshoot at a right angle to accommodate more shops. L-shapes are often utilized for strip centers and community centers and may feature two anchor stores or main tenants at either end of the L. U-shaped. As the name suggests, U-shaped centers take their name from the letter U and feature a straight line center with two arms connected at right angles on either side. These types of centers can allow for up to three anchor retailers or major tenants, one large store in the middle, and one at either end of the U, with shops along the arms. T-shaped, T-shaped centers, T-design, centers consist of two strips of shops configured to form a T. This shape allows for up to three anchors or main tenants at either end of the T. Parking is located on all sides. Cluster. This pattern classification consists of an anchor retail space, rectangular in design, with shops and parking along all four sides. Triangle. Triangle design centers allow up to three anchors or main tenants, one at the top of the triangle shape and one at either end of the base. Strips of shops extend along each side and form the base of the triangle. Parking is located along all sides. Dumbbell. Dumbbell-designed shopping malls predominated in the early 1970s. Fairly simplistic in layout, the dumbbell center featured two anchors at opposite ends of the complex, with a strip of forward-facing stores on either side, all sharing a common walkway. Parking surrounded the center, with multiple entrances to the complex, allowing shoppers easy access to the various retailers. Double dumbbell. As regional malls grew in size, the simplistic dumbbell design morphed into a double dumbbell. Many mall rats, adolescents who grew up spending time in shopping malls, of the 1980s and 90s are all too familiar with the double dumbbell designed shopping mall. The double dumbbell shape forms a cross, like two dumbbells placed on top of each other, crosswise. This cross allows for four anchor tenants at the north, south, east, and west wings of the center. Retail shops face each other along the arms of the cross, sharing common walkways. Double dumbbells also often extended upward, adding a second or even third story of shopping and dining. Parking surrounds the center on all sides, and in some cases, garages were constructed to accommodate tenant and consumer parking. Shopping center characteristics. In addition to design classifications, shopping centers are classified by their size and characteristics. The type of anchors they attract, the size of the trade area they service, and the amount of land that they require are all vital characteristics that developers, retailers, and investors must consider. Categories of shopping centers include general purpose centers, neighborhood centers, strip centers, community centers, and regional or super-regional malls, specialized purpose centers, power centers, lifestyle centers, factory outlets, and limited purpose centers, airport retail centers, not covered in this text. Neighborhood shopping centers, typically anchored by supermarket chains, neighborhood shopping centers are located near residential areas so that residents can run their errands and do their food shopping. These centers are all about offering area residents convenience. According to the ICS-CUS, Shopping Center Classification and Characteristics, neighborhood centers are relatively small, at over 70,000 square feet in size over 3 to 5 acres. These centers offer 5 to 20 stores, serving a trade area of 3 miles. Strip centers. Strip centers, sometimes referred to as shopping plazas or convenience centers, consist of a row of stores surrounding by parking. Parking lot size varies, with some centers having ample parking, while others are quite limited. These may be anchorless and often feature a convenience store or mini-mart as the main tenant. Community centers. Community centers are larger than a strip or neighborhood center, but smaller by far than a regional mall. These centers are typically anchored by supermarkets, large drugstore chains, discount stores, or other well-known retailers. These centers average in size just under 200,000 square feet, consisting of anywhere from 15 to 40 stores spread across 10 to 40 acres. These centers, also known as large neighborhood centers, serve a trade area of 3 to 6 miles in size. Regional malls, trendy in the 1970s and 80s, regional malls are generally large, sprawling centers anchored by multiple big-name department stores, surrounded by smaller retailers. Common walkways between shops are enclosed, making it easy to shop day or night, rain or shine, and surrounding parking is ample. In the last decade, regional malls have begun to fall out of favor with consumers who are turning more and more to online retailers for their purchases. This trend toward cyber shopping has hurt brick-and-mortar retailers, causing many to close their doors. Major department store retailers are finding it difficult to compete with online sites that offer the convenience of shopping at home or from anywhere with a smartphone, free shipping, and easy return policies. However, all is not lost. Some regional malls have been able to recover from big anchor store closures by transitioning into mixed-use developments, offering specialty retail, entertainment, hotel or hospitality, and in some cases, residential space. The trend toward this type of mixed-use development is catching on, especially with millennials who like to work and play close to home instead of trekking in and out of town from the suburbs every day. According to the ICSC, the average size of a regional mall is just under 600,000 square feet, encompassing 40 to 100 acres of land, with a trade area size of 5 to 15 miles. There are typically between 40 to 80 stores in the center, depending on the traffic from two or more anchors. Super regional malls are larger, coming in at over 1,250,000 square feet, situated on 60 to 120 acres, with a trade area size of 5 to 25 miles. The number of tenants varies, but super regional malls generally rely on three or more anchors to pull in consumers. An example of a well-known super regional mall is the Mall of the Americas in Bloomington, Minnesota. Power centers. Power centers are massive, the average being over 400,000 square feet, and can easily be found over 1 million square feet. These centers are built for big box stores, also known as category killers, like large home improvement chains and warehouse-type retailers that can take up to 90% of the gross leasable area, GLA, of the center. Category killers derive their name from their dominance in the market, which can edge out other retailers that sell similar products. They kill the competition in their category of the market, offering more selection of goods at lower prices. Often requiring between 25 to 80 acres of land, they serve a trade area of 5 to 10 miles. Lifestyle centers. Lifestyle centers are typically more upscale than neighborhood or community centers, offering boutique retail and dining. Commonly open-air in design, these types of properties have found popularity in affluent suburbs, often designed to be mixed-use, MXD, and to evoke the look and feel of the American Main Street. They do away with the enclosed atmosphere of the traditional American mall. Factory outlets. Factory outlets feature national and international name brand retailers, selling their goods to the general public at discounted prices. Usually located a considerable distance from the city center of a major metropolitan city, factory outlets are medium to large, requiring 10 to 50 acres of land, servicing a trade area of 25 up to 75 miles. These centers are usually anchorless because the retailers are well-known brand name stores. The table below is adapted from the ICS-CUS, Shopping Center Classification and Characteristics, January 2017, which was taken from sources including ICS, C Research, and CoStar Realty Information Incorporated. Retailer concerns. Retailers must take into account many factors when deciding to open a brick-and-mortar store in a shopping center. Some major concerns include location. Just as in residential real estate, location is a significant factor in shopping center selection. Retailers and business owners want to be near the action for maximum visibility by consumers and rely upon data like demographics and traffic patterns as a basis for their decisions. Geographical location is just one part of that equation. Retailers also want to choose the perfect physical location within the center. Demographics. All retail is demographically driven, including the race, income, education level, and age distribution of a geographical area. Retailers want to ensure that they are reaching their target market. For example, a pizza chain devoted to children and families should open locations in areas where there are high concentrations of families with small children and disposable income. Fast food restaurants serving up late-night cheap eats do well in areas with teenagers and college-age consumers who focus on the price, not the quality. Parking ratios. Retailers want to make parking near their business as convenient as possible for their patrons. Consumers do not want to deal with parking nightmares, like lack of open spaces or inconveniently located parking far from a store entrance. One method of calculating parking ratios is to compare the parking square footage to the center's square footage. The ratio is derived by dividing the number of vehicle parking spaces by the square footage of the center's shopping area. Results are expressed per 1,000 square feet. For example, a neighborhood shopping center with 50,000 square feet has 250 parking spaces. Divide 250 by 50 per 1,000 spaces. There are 5 parking spaces per 1,000 square feet of the shopping center's space. Local authorities have different parking requirements according to building type, and some spaces must be designated as handicapped parking to meet ADA requirements. Tenant mix. Retailers want to know what other tenants will be occupying space in a shopping center. Some tenants, especially restaurants, may require non-compete clauses in their leases, specifying that they are the only business to provide a particular product or service in a center. Most retailers want to be in a center with a major supermarket or brand name retailer so that they can capitalize on the foot traffic generated by that tenant. Shadow anchors are also important to smaller retailers. Lease provisions and terms. Retailers are concerned about the provisions contained in the landlord's lease, especially when it comes to use provisions, parking, and signage. Lease terms are also a significant concern, as retail leases have traditionally been long-term in nature, usually 20 to 30 years. Due to the current economic atmosphere in which major stores and anchors are closing up brick-and-mortar locations, many retailers are pushing to have shorter lease terms, even as short as 5 to 10 years. Industrial property. When people think of industrial real estate, they often think of manufacturing, storage and distribution, production lines, and research and development, and they are correct. Trade and consumption are the primary drivers of demand for industrial real estate. Most of the world's products and goods are conceived, created, stored, shipped, and received from these industrial properties. Nations' economies depend upon the exportation and importation of their products to the global market. For this reason, industrial properties in markets near seaports, airports, railroad hubs, and trucking routes are usually in high demand and make excellent investments. There has been a recent surge in the industrial real estate market due to the trend of consumers ordering products online. Large online retailers, like Amazon, must obtain warehouse storage in strategic locations across the U.S., called fulfillment centers. Strategically located fulfillment centers allow the retailers to fill customer orders quickly and efficiently, then get them shipped out for overnight or same-day delivery. Multinational courier delivery services also needed for large sorting and distribution centers outside of major cities to handle the volume of online ordering. Long-term leases with high yields attract investors to industrial properties, though there are many risks to consider, including cost, obsolescence, and vacancy, particularly for special-purpose and single-purpose properties. Industrial properties come in all shapes and sizes and can be utilized for a variety of businesses, like manufacturing and distribution, to name a few. Each business will require a slightly different type of industrial building to suit its specific needs. For this reason, commercial agents who deal in leasing or selling industrial property need to be experts in their field. Seasoned commercial real estate professionals should be able to assess a property immediately, based purely on the type of trucks a client uses. There are three types of properties. 1. 50-50 office warehouse. This type of building is typically constructed out of heavy metal framing, complete with roller doors for easy loading and unloading of materials by large trucks and work vans. 50% of the space is air-conditioned office space. The other 50% is warehouse space. 50-50 warehouse and office spaces are perfect for companies involved in research and development and small technology startups who need office space and work or lab space. 2. Semi-dock. Semi-dock buildings are ideal for companies that employ box trucks for the movement of goods. Semi-docks allow trucks to back in and unload dollies onto the floor of the building because the lip of the truck will match up with the floor of the loading bay, making them perfect for warehouse and storage facilities. 3. Dock. Dock buildings are designed with the right door height and width for larger semi-trucks and heavy moving equipment like forklifts and mobile cranes. Only 10 to 15% of the building serves as air-conditioned office space, with the majority of the square footage allotted for large pallets of merchandise loaded and unloaded through multiple loading bays equipped with roller doors. There is usually a glass-walled office space with a view of the loading bays, from which a floor manager can supervise operations from all directions with an eye for safety. The loading docks are not flush with the back of the trucks. Instead, they slope downward, allowing for the truck to be backed in and unloaded or loaded by a forklift or crane. Industrial property classification. Industrial properties can be clustered together in multi-tenant industrial parks with between 5 and 50 different flex units. These industrial parks offer a combination of office and storage or manufacturing space. Other industrial properties might occupy large acreage off of a major trucking route, near the railroad, airport, or seaport. Tenants are more concerned with the functionality of the property than aesthetics and amenities. General purpose or warehouses. General purpose industrial buildings are flexible spaces that can be adapted and configured for a variety of uses. Ideal for distribution centers, these buildings feature large open floor plans with flat, durable concrete floors and high ceilings, allowing for different configurations of high shelving racks for storage and picking. Special purpose, or light industrial. Highly specialized unique buildings constructed around a specific purpose often present many limitations on use, making them challenging to market. Special purpose buildings are often designed for a specific manufacturer and may be outfitted with industry-specific equipment that is virtually useless outside of its intended industry, for example, refrigeration or cold storage buildings. These are often associated with light industrial as they function well for the production of smaller consumer products. Single purpose or heavy industrial. Designed and purpose-built for one specific type of industry or company, single-purpose industrial buildings can present issues for their owners. The only tenants likely to lease space are firms involved in the same industry. Examples of single-purpose properties include chemical production, plants, and manufacturers of large, heavy products. Land. Land brokerage can be very profitable for both investors and agents. License holders who decide to deal in land must be informed about many complicated issues. Among the various commercial real estate specializations, land is perhaps the hardest to broker. What does an agent do, for example, if someone finds a grave on land that has been purchased for development? In the state of Texas, the developer must stop clearing the land. The developer must obtain the permission of each living ancestor of the deceased to relocate the grave. If the developer can work around the grave sites, he or she may have to provide the family the right to visit the grave in perpetuity. Who wants a cemetery in the middle of a retail development or industrial park? Land brokerage is also the area of commercial real estate in which agents can run into the most legal complications if due diligence is not done properly. Due to the delicate and complicated nature of land brokerage, we will go into much more depth on it and its potential as a specialization in Chapter 4. Issues associated with land brokerage might include utilities and how to get them, easements, zoning and deed restrictions, environmental issues, neighbors, wetlands, or migratory protections, endangered species, trees, drainage and flooding, mineral rights, water rights, air rights, solar rights, wind rights, hunting leases, encroachments, ingress and egress, title issues, liens, boundaries and legal descriptions, rollback taxes, graves, and archaeological sites. Banks are often hesitant to finance land deals. A lender classifies raw land into two categories, speculative and non-speculative. If the development of raw land is not planned within 12 to 24 months of financing, the bank considers it speculative, which means a higher risk for the lender, making it an undesirable deal. Why is this? The primary source of repayment in commercial real estate is the cash flow of the property. Raw land generates negative cash flow, yet the owner or investor is still paying property taxes and making loan payments on it. If construction is planned within 12 to 24 months, the bank considers the land non-speculative and will finance it at a loan term of usually no more than 2 years to give the borrower time to finalize plans, specs, and budgets. The borrower can then approach the bank for construction needs. Hospitality properties. Hospitality properties include motels, bed and breakfasts, hotels, golf resorts, and restaurants, among others. Hospitality properties are designed for travel and entertainment and range in quality and size. These properties require owners and investors who will stay on top of traveler profiles, changing tastes, and consumer expectations. Hotels can be small, boutique properties in busy city centers, or large, sprawling resorts built around a casino with access to all possible amenities, entertainment, dining, and high-end shopping available to guests. Capital expenditures are high, and demand for these properties is greater in destination cities like New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New Orleans, Las Vegas, and Orlando. Hospitality properties in other U.S. cities experience surges in occupancy rates at certain times of the year and adjust their room rates accordingly. For example, South by Southwest in Austin, Texas brings in travelers from across the globe every March to attend the festivals, exhibitions, and related conferences. The demand for hospitality properties also depends on the city's employment and population trends. The hospitality market has felt some pushback from home-sharing companies like Airbnb over the last few years. Travelers can connect with Airbnb hosts around the world, booking everything from single rooms and entire homes to one-of-a-kind properties like castles, treehouses, yurts, and igloos. This trend of home sharing has created a good deal of competition in the hospitality market. Traditional hotels find it difficult to compete with an industry that has little to no rules and very few upfront expenditures. However, the hospitality industry as a whole continues to grow, adding jobs to the employment market. Investors in hospitality real estate include long-term investors with large amounts of capital, like insurance companies and corporate pension funds. 5-minute case study. The Cosmopolitan Las Vegas Hotel and Casino went down in history as one of the most expensive buildings in the world, costing almost $4 billion to construct. Built in 2010, the property is on the busy Las Vegas Strip, close to other massive hotels and casinos like the Bellagio, Caesar's Palace, and the Aria. It is strategically located near shopping, dining, and other popular tourist destinations. Two tall towers featuring well-appointed rooms rise up on either end of the property, which includes chef-inspired restaurants, popular bars and nightclubs, three resort-style pools, a spa, a fitness facility, and of course, a casino equipped with 1,300 slot machines, table games like roulette and craps, and a race and sports book. With over 3,000 rooms, 110,000 square feet of casino, high-end retail shops, a theater, and meeting or convention space, the Cosmopolitan Las Vegas was originally financed by Deutsche Bank and is now owned by the Blackstone Group, a private equity firm managing over $115 billion in real estate assets for public and corporate pension funds, among other investors. In addition to hotels, Blackstone's real estate portfolio includes retail, office, industrial, and residential properties. The Cosmopolitan is marketed heavily over the airwaves in order to get paying customers through its gleaming glass doors. It is associated with a trendy yet sophisticated crowd with the financial means to gamble and party. Special purpose properties. Special purpose properties are often the hardest to appraise and to finance because they are constructed with one specific type of business in mind. This type of purpose-built property limits other businesses and industries from properly utilizing the space without investing significant capital in renovation projects and modifications. Business owners who require financing for special purpose properties can apply for loans from the U.S. Small Business Administration, SBA. Unlike a commercial bank, the SBA evaluates the financial performance of the business rather than the property's income stream. The most common types of special purpose properties are gas stations, churches or places of worship, car repair shops, and car washes, as well as enormous structures like school buildings. Other properties that might fall under this special purpose category are cemeteries, marinas, wineries, bowling alleys, amusement parks, and sports complexes. Other limited use properties can also be special purpose, like hospitals and nursing homes. Special purpose properties are not lost causes. There are many creative business owners and investors who can see the hidden potential in an existing special purpose property. Scores of old church buildings are now everything from restaurants and breweries to single-family housing. Some special purpose properties have hidden issues beyond their design and construction that make them difficult to market to buyers and investors. Gas stations, especially older ones, for example, can present environmental issues for buyers due to underground fuel storage tanks, USTs, that may have leaked. Lenders will require an environmental survey of the site to assess its risk of contamination. Gas stations that pass environmental surveys can be adapted for a variety of businesses like bars, coffee shops, and retail stores willing to capitalize on their strategic locations, which is usually on a corner or a busy street.